A quick warning that this episode contains references to death and suicide, plus some strong language.
We're back. We're back. I'm a professional communicator, and I think it was very clear the way we ended the last episode that we were coming back. By very clear, I mean not clear at all, because everybody's been sending me messages like, please tell me Terrible Thanks for Asking is coming back. Every time I get one, I freeze. I'm like, oh my God, did I get fired? And then I realize, no, I was a little slap happy when we recorded the last episode. I think I made a joke about maybe not coming back, but I'm back. Studio 3A, and I have a key card, so they can't throw me out. All right, now we will have the show. It's been 7 weeks, guys. Is this on? Yes. All right, here we are. More Terrible Thanks for Asking.
Let's go from oldest to youngest.
Oh, of course you would say that.
you would say that, wouldn't you?
So this is Liza, and I am the oldest of the three siblings.
I'm Alex, we're doing youngest to oldest.
It's okay.
It's okay.
Keep going. You're doing great.
I'm the baby, and then...
My name is Dave. I'm the middle brother, the only brother.
And you know what? You got skipped over, which I'm a middle child, so I'm sensitive to that. I'm Nora McInerney, and this is Terrible. Thanks for asking. This, all this banter you just heard, that's what it sounds like when a group of siblings get together. Or when a group of siblings who like each other get together, at least. If I weren't in the studio with my headphones on, with my producer Hans here, I would be able to confuse this with my own siblings. There's the talking over one another. It's all the laughing, the finishing of each other's sentences, more laughing, more talking over one another. But these are not my siblings. This is David, Liza, and Alex Achille.
Yeah, 100%.
Do you ever get into, like, dead dad contests with people where you're like, people are like, oh, how'd your dad die? And you're like, I want you to go first because
Mine's better.
I'm about to drop a bomb.
Yeah.
Or the best is when someone's talking about their parents and you say, really? Well, mine
That's
are
nice.
Dead.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks for rubbing it in. Both of mine are dead.
Yeah. Oh, God. Are your parents sending you too many text messages? Is that annoying to you?
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, you have to call her back? Really? Oh. That's unfortunate. Well, thanks a lot. I never get to call my mom.
Yeah. Liza and David and Alex are all crammed together into a little studio to talk with me because Alex, who's the baby of the family by almost 9 years, emailed us with their story. The story is that bomb that David talked about dropping. It's a big one. It's a doozy. It includes a dad who was killed by a hitman in a dispute over a girlfriend and a mother who died in a fiery car wreck 4 years after that. So you'd understand if we made this an episode about two extremely tragic and headline-worthy parental deaths because WTF, your dad is murdered and then your mom drives her car off a cliff and dies in an inferno? Like even as a plotline in a soap opera, even as a TTFA episode, that's a little much. But it turns out this story isn't so much about their traumatic orphaning. It's just about them, the kids, the siblings, David, Liza, and Alex Achille.
I was curling my sister's hair this morning in the bathroom, and my brother was in the shower. And Liza was like, hold on. She ran, got a big old bucket of cold water, and poured it on my brother. And, like, that's
Which
what
was
we,
totally awesome
that's
for
what
me.
We used to do all the time. It was, like, all bringing back all the memories.
Alex, Liza, and David grew up in Los Gatos, California. It was a blended family led by their mom, Michelle. Michelle had a traumatic childhood, and her goal in life was to raise a family that was the opposite of what she had growing up. Michelle just wanted to give her kids the best childhood they could possibly have. And she succeeded. Michelle was the best mom. Not like me, not like your mom, who just got the number one mom mug because your teacher made you make one. I mean, like, even I have one. Michelle was the number one mom.
She would make us macaroni and cheese, Kraft, and hot dogs. But damn it if it wasn't the perfect consistency and warmth and just the best cook. Like,
but she also was a really good cook.
Yeah.
She could make a meal out of nothing.
Yeah.
And
slop.
That was the last meal that she made me before she
died.
I was frozen in my freezer when she died. Yeah.
What is slop?
It's green beans, rice, and ground beef with like
teriyaki
soy sauce. We had nothing in the fridge one night, and she's like, I'm gonna make you guys the best dinner ever. This is an old family recipe. We call it slop. And really, she was completely winging it. It's a traditional family meal now.
Michelle was also the best listener and the best looking, which kind of feels like a gross thing to say, and are looks important to how good of a mom you are? Of course not. But when you happen to look like Christie Brinkley, it's just a thing that people bring up, which means a lot of uncomfortable conversations about your mom in front of you.
Which killed me, because all my friends were like, your mom is so hot.
Totally. Growing up was like, oh my God, your mom.
Oh my God, your mom's like wine. The older, the finer, huh?
Which that was like so annoying.
My hell.
But even though Michelle was the best, the kids knew that their mother hadn't always been the happy mom that they knew her as.
She struggled with mental illness her whole life and through like her own childhood traumas.
Michelle was open with her children about her struggles, including her first suicide attempt at age 10.
She had a scar on her wrist from the early one, and she was totally like, I tried to kill myself. Like,
yeah.
She never hid it from us, because she was almost teaching us, like, people can get to this point in life. And then she would follow it up with, like, but I love you guys so much that I would never do that to you again.
Right.
Michelle was always a great mom, even if she didn't have the greatest taste in guys. But when Liza was 9 and David was 7, Michelle married a guy who was just as great as her. His name was Mark Achille.
And so he was, I guess you would call him our stepdad, but we always considered him our dad.
We referred to him as dad.
Mark was considered the unofficial mayor of Los Gatos. He was the kind of cool, friendly, handsome guy who knew everyone everywhere he went. It probably helped that he was also a bartender. Mark and Michelle had Alex, the baby of the family, and the Achilles were a happy family of 5. Mark and Michelle were great parents and great friends to each other. But when Alex was 9, they realized that they weren't great at being married to each other and separated. This is where you may expect things to go off the rails, but no. Mark and Michelle were really great at being separated, too. They were friendly. They still had family dinners. Mark and Michelle were co-parenting when it wasn't called co-parenting. Liza and David were off on their own, but Mark's flexible schedule meant that he and Alex had lots of time together. Here's Alex.
He picked me up from school every morning. We would go to the donut shop, he'd get coffee, I'd get a donut, he'd take me to school, he'd pick me up from school, he'd take me to all my sporting events. He was my person. It was just me and him at his house, because my brother and sister were grown and off and living on their own. So when I was at my dad's, it was just me and him, and he was my bud.
Eventually, Mark started dating someone younger. He bought a restaurant, and then another, and he found success that he hadn't had while he was with Michelle. And even though he still came by the house for dinner, it was hard for Michelle not to feel like he'd traded her in for a newer model, one who was just a few years older than her oldest daughter.
Like, my parents never bought a house when they were together. They didn't have a nice car. And so then it was like, all of a sudden, my dad leaves and then buys this bar and gets this and was like, very
she
successful,
the
and
dust,
then she's
kinda.
Like, well, what the hell? Like, where was this when we were married? Or, you know, so.
But she would never do anything that would, like, make it uncomfortable for the other players involved.
Like, some ex-wives or whatever would text the new girl and be like, hope you like what you got, you know, blah, blah, blah. Right. Like, that was not
her style at all.
She was very, like, classy, even in anger.
Michelle had spent her adult life focused on her family. Now, the husband and the life she'd planned for were gone, and the kids she had poured all her time and energy into were growing up. Alex went to college. Liza and David were full-on grown-ups. And they all knew that their mom was lonely and struggling in this new season of life. Her dating life was not healthy, and she had a series of awful boyfriends, but Mark was doing great. He got an offer to buy his restaurants for cash, and he took it. He had a much younger woman on his arm, and he had a great relationship with all three of his kids. For Mark, everything was going great, which is why we're going to take a break here.
I just feel like we are surrounded in this world by bullshit.
So how can you know what's real and what's not? Science versus, that's how. We answer questions like, does anti-aging skincare actually work? And what is your true personality type? And to answer these questions, we don't use opinions. We dive into the scientific studies, talk to the experts, and put it in a podcast that I know you are gonna love. Listen to Science Versus on Spotify.
We got some huge news. Huge. Nobody has bigger news than this. Everyone agrees. Nobody has bigger news than me. Our big news is that we are doing another live show. Two live shows in St. Paul, Minnesota. One on Friday, April 13th. Ooh. My lucky day. And one Saturday, April 14th. Ooh. That's someone's lucky day. It's your lucky day because you could come to one or both. Your choice. Everything's up to you. You don't have to come. It would be great to see you. You can get those tickets at...
We're performing at the Fitzgerald Theater.
Oh, yeah.
Well, tell them the theme is going
to
be...
I want you to put this in the whole commercial. You talk... It's a Friday the 13th theme, obviously. I'm not just going to let the day go to waste. It will be performed at the historic Fitzgerald Theater here in St. Paul, Minnesota. You can get tickets online. Jeez Louise.
Tickets are on sale today.
Tickets are on sale today.
Two members
of the If you're a member of the Terrible Club, you can buy your tickets February 6th. Other people who are not part of the Terrible Club can buy their tickets February 8th, if there's any left. Get your tickets at fitzgeraldtheater.org. Also, if you're like, oh, I live on the West Coast, maybe I should fly in for this show. I mean, sure, but like, we'll also do some shows like on the West Coast. Okay, back to the show now. And we're back. Liza, David, and Alex are just living their regular lives. Their mom is, you know, going through a rough patch. Their dad's doing well, but overall, things are just fine and good. And here's the thing about having your life fall apart. It never happens when you're ready for it. It doesn't happen when you are fully braced in a defensive stance, real stable, ready to take the blow. Instead, it waits until you least expect it. It waits until you're snug in your little dorm room.
My best friend was my roommate, Trisha, and we had gone out on Thursday night, so we were having like a
Thirsty Thursday, as it's
exactly
known.
Yeah. And so Friday we were just lazy couch potatoes in our
studying bed. A
yeah,
bunch.
Yeah, totally studying all day.
It waits until you're running some mindless errand.
So I was shopping at Nordstrom, and I had my son, who was about 6 months old at the time.
It waits until you're at work.
So I was at work at the time. I worked on an ambulance.
When you're busy doing something completely unremarkable, that is when your life decides to explode like a motor vehicle in a Michael Bay movie. For the Achille kids, that mundane and unremarkable time was 11:30 a.m. on March 14th, 2008. While Alex nursed her hangover and Liza browsed at Nordstrom,
and David drove around in an ambulance. Their dad, Mark Achille, walked out of his townhouse in Los Gatos and was shot 8 times in his own driveway.
So I was standing on the 3rd floor of Nordstrom where the Brat by the Brass Plum department, right by customer service. And I was about to go down the escalator and I heard my cell phone ring. So I stopped and answered it. And my son was in his stroller. And on the other end was my mom. And she was almost like inaudible. I couldn't understand what she was saying. And all I heard her say was, "Mark's dead, Mark's dead, Mark's dead, Mark's dead, Mark's dead." And in that moment, and I can like remember that feeling of thinking, there's no way that my Mark is dead. So I know she's not talking about him. And then, so I said, "What?" I mean, I was like, I'll call you back.
I got a call from our aunt, Norma. I'm like, "Hey, Norm, what's up?" She's like, "Hey, David, like, I heard some disturbing news." I'm like, "Okay, what is it?" She's like, I'm getting my hair done, and someone in the salon here in Los Gatos said, "Your dad was shot?" And I was like, "Excuse me?" She's like, "Yeah, do you know anything? Have you heard anything?" And I was like, "Let me call you back."
I went into shock mode because I was trying to figure out, like, wait, shot? Who? How? What? I just couldn't understand it. And then there's my 6-month-old baby staring up at me. So I immediately, like, snapped back into reality. Hey, okay, I'm a mom. I'm a parent. My baby needs me. So I walked over to customer service, and I had worked at Nordstrom for a long time. So I knew, I picked up my baby out of the stroller, and I remember like barely even being able to hold him because I was shaking so bad. And then I called my brother and I was like, "I'm here at Nordstrom. I don't know what to do."
So I looked at my partner and he's like, "What is happening?" And I'm like, "Hey, dude, drive me to Nordstrom, Valley Fair right now." Like, I was in plan mode. Like, we need to get everybody here together and then we'll go from there. That was like my goal.
Please tell me you turned on the lights and the siren for the ambulance.
No, I didn't.
Okay. Because you guys were raised so well.
Yeah, public safety came first, you know?
So, Alex, at this point, where are you?
I'm in Santa Barbara. In my dorm, Trisha gets a text message from one of our girlfriends in Los Gatos that said, "Hey, is Alex okay?" And Trisha's like, "What?" And so she asks me, she's like, "Have you talked to your dad today?" And I'm like, "What? No, why?" She's like, "Why don't you just call him?" I'm like, "Okay." So I call. I think I called him like 3 or 4 times, doesn't answer. And then I called Sue Farwell, which is my dad's business partner, who he owned the businesses with. And she just answered the phone, and she just said, "Alex, I'm so sorry." I think I just like fell to the floor, started screaming. I like hung up the phone. And then I remember just being like, "I need to go home. I need to go home right now."
The Achille kids all head home, back to their mom. Michelle is just as shocked as they are, and none of it makes sense. Why would their dad have been murdered in his driveway on a Friday morning in the town he loved? They don't have answers, but they have each other. And once again, Michelle's kids need her.
And then Mark died, and I think it broke her bad. Like, it was like just summoned up everything that had ever been bad in her life. And so I remember, like, she struggled her whole life with like drug and alcohol abuse and was really, really good for a long time. But I started seeing like inklings of that starting to enter her life again. And then you would call her out on it and she would guilt you into like why you should feel bad for her and all these things. Like, now she was a victim, like to the max, and it was her excuse to, like, play the victim part, and that sucked.
This is what it looks like when Michelle starts to break. Just a few days after Mark's death, Michelle decided she wanted a drink, which turned into many drinks, which turned into Michelle getting very, very drunk. A family friend called Dave, who met his mother in the parking lot of a strip mall.
I was like pissed because I'm like, hold on a second. Don't start drinking now. Like, don't, you're keeping this whole thing together. Like, what are you doing? And we got into it, which was my mistake. Like, I regret it so bad, but I totally engaged. And like, we screamed at each other and she snapped. Literally got out of the car, crawled underneath the car, was saying the demons are going to get me. And I was like, now I went from mad to freaked out. And I was like, trying to get her out from under the car. And she's like, she wouldn't come out.
Dave called his sister Liza, and the two of them decided together to call an ambulance and have their mother taken to the psych ward at the county hospital.
And like, we get a call and I put it on speakerphone and it was my mom. And she was like, I never want to, this is from the psych ward. She's like, I never want to see you again. You're not my son. How could you do this to me, you disloyal little shit? Like, and like, basically confirmed every hell that I was feeling. And I just look at my wife, Kate, or my fiance at the time, now my beautiful, sexy wife. And I looked at her and I was just like, I just want to disappear. Like, and thank God the next morning, like, when we picked her up, my mom like apologized and said she didn't mean any of that stuff. But you could tell she was still like, you should have done that. Like, but don't worry about it. We're good. And like, it was kind of a point of contention forever between us. But I know now, like, I was just making a choice in the moment. And like, I mean, I would challenge anybody to be there and like, have to do what I had to do at the same time, so I don't feel so bad anymore, you know? But it was hell. It was a hell.
Michelle pulls it together for her kids. Those kids she needed and missed, they need her again. And she rallies for them.
I feel like we had a lot of sessions there where we like, I was able to fully explain like what I was upset about, yeah, why I was angry and what I was worried about and what I was sad about. And my mom was really good at she wanted to take care of everything, so that we could like go through it. And we did. So I feel like the grieving process like was healthy, not over, but like healthy. But there was always this looming weight of trial.
A few weeks after their dad's murder, the story started to come together. The police arrested a man named Paul Garcia. Paul was actually the one who had bought their dad's bar and restaurant. And Paul was also involved with and in love with the bartender at the bar, who was Mark's girlfriend. And according to police, Paul was the one who paid three other men to kill Mark. So that's a lot for Liza, Dave, and Alex to take in. Your dad is dead. Your dad is dead because he was murdered. That's a lot. Now, your dad is dead and was murdered because he's one of 3 points in a love triangle. Your dad is dead and murdered because he was in a love triangle, and now it's headline news in your hometown. Whew. More arrests are made. And eventually, there are 4 men charged in their dad's murder.
So now we're like kind of trying to finish up grieving. And I felt like we were being forced to keep this wound like open with salt and lemon poured in it and keep stabbing it. And like we, whether we wanted to and tried as hard as we possibly could, we had no choice but to keep rehashing and living this like hell for years, years, which is like cruel. Really cruel to do to somebody.
When Dave says years, he means years. It took 2 years after their dad's murder for a very public trial to begin.
The prosecution paints Paul Garcia as a jilted lover out for revenge against Mark Achille. The defense suggests Mark was murdered for a drug debt. It's literally headline news. And then some. The local paper set up a live blog and a Twitter account dedicated just to providing updates throughout the trial. And everyone in town came out to spectate.
Yeah. It was so weird.
We had to fight for seats at our dad's trial from, like, strangers. Yeah. Like, one time this guy was like, this is my seat and I'm sitting here. I'm like, who are you? And he's like, I'm just a guest. I'm sitting here. I'm like, get the fuck out of that seat. I'm sitting. Like, I had to fight for the right to be in there.
Which, you're the joker and you lighten the mood, like, when it gets serious. So for you to have to get to that point is, like, so
stress level.
Like you. Yeah.
Which annoyed me so bad, too. Yeah. I'm like, I wanted everyone just to go home.
Yeah,
like,
seriously.
Leave us all alone.
Yeah, like, it's news for you, but it's life for
my
us.
My life.
Yeah.
The world breaks everyone. And after, many are stronger in the broken places. I wrote that. I'm just kidding. It's Hemingway. And it's true. Many are stronger in the broken places. And many are not. Many are just broken. Many just limp along as best they can for as long as they can, until the duct tape starts to peel and the truth of their hurt is too obvious to ignore any longer. Mark's trial had given Michelle renewed purpose in life. The trial was a place to go, a thing to focus on in her grief. She was at the trial every single day with one purpose: to support justice for her murdered sort of ex-husband. Looking through all of the headlines around the murder, I thought, wow, she looks amazing. I'm a shallow person, but also she really did look so beautiful. And if I were ever murdered, I would hope that my current husband would also look good and also show up every day and wrestle some justice out of the system. The Achille kids were there at the trial sometimes, but they couldn't be there every day like their mom was. And while Michelle looked strong and capable and very beautiful, Mark's murder and this trial took a huge toll.
All those, like, demons and shit that she had to go through, she just bottled it up, put it away for later. Well, now it's later, right?
On May 10th, 2010, the jury found all four defendants guilty of first-degree murder. Michelle got justice for Mark, but nobody really won. The bullets didn't just hit Mark, Michelle said during the sentencing. We all have pieces of them in us. After the sentencing, only one of the four defendants chose to speak. 22-year-old Daniel Chaidez, the man who had pulled the trigger. Here's Alex.
He was up there for probably like 10 minutes and he had such a bad stuttering problem that he probably only got out, I'm sorry, like, I'm so sorry. And the judge kept asking him, like, Mr. Chaidez, are you done? Are you done? And he kept saying, no, I'm not done. And it just, I just felt so bad for him because he ruined his life and made such a stupid decision. And he had a daughter. And his daughter was going to have to grow up for part of her life without a dad. And it just made me feel terrible that one little stupid decision ruined so many people's lives.
The cruelest thing about the world is that it just keeps moving, no matter how stuck you feel. The world had kept turning without Mark. It kept turning after the trial. and Michelle had been having a hard time keeping up. After the trial was over, Michelle's trouble amplified. One night, the kids get a call that she has attempted suicide. She had taken a whole bottle of Xanax, drank a bottle of wine, and locked herself in her car before her landlord found her.
That was like the beginning of the you could see now there was a battle. Like, she had her good months and her bad months, but there was definite, like, now all the blinds were pulled back.
For a while, Michelle left California to live in Milwaukee with Liza, her oldest.
There came a point when she was staying with me where I was like, these are the rules of my house. This is how it has to be for the safety of everybody and the, like, well-being of everybody. And she was like, then I'm not staying here. So, you know, when you, like, one of the things that I struggle with a lot and that I, like, trying to get better at not doing with is, like, you think about all the things that you say, like, did I yell at her too much? Did I not yell at her enough? Was I too nice to her? Was I not nice enough? Should I have forced her to go somewhere? Should I have, you know, all the should have, could have, would haves. And I think about, you know, there was this, like, one defining moment of, like, again, having an argument with her and her saying, like, I am sick. Like, you don't understand. I am sick. It's not like I'm choosing to live like this. You think I want to live this way, but I don't. And I thought that she just, it was as easy as making a choice. Like, you either choose to stay in your sickness or you choose to get better. And I felt like she wasn't choosing to get better. I feel guilty about thinking like she had a choice.
Well, you said yes to living with her. She asked us and we said no. So
I'm better
so
than
you. So you're better than me.
I win the best child award.
Yeah. Okay. I think there were many conversations between all three of us kids that after we all talked about it and made a blatant effort to be like, okay, if she really doesn't want to live, like, we got to make sure that if she dies, we can always look back so that we can live our lives knowing that we did everything we could. And I think we did.
I feel that way too.
I really think we did. Like, supported her through, like, even as the little things of, like, going with her to appointments to counseling and, like, getting her a pill box so that she could keep her, you know, her pills organized and cleaning her house and bringing her food and groceries. And at the very end, she was totally, like, I thought, like, I think we're coming out of this. Mom was, like, sober and, like, I was even letting her watch our daughter now and, like, I really felt like right at the time she died, I was like, I think we're on the uphill now or whatever, the downhill, whatever. Like, we're in the good part, however you say it.
Now, even if it's happened before, and even if you know it could happen again, you're still never ready for your life to fall apart because, you know, it waits. It waits until you're home from a day on the lake with your friends.
I, like, laid down in bed, and I was, like, kind of, like, resting, napping, whatever.
It waits until you're out picking up some stuff you need.
I was coming home from Target.
It waits until another regular day at work.
Now I'm a firefighter.
That is when your life decides to fall apart. Again.
And I hear a call go out for a wildfire started by a car fire. And I was like, whew, we got a ripper here.
What Dave didn't know was that his mother's car had gone off the road at around 12:20 a.m. outside of Saratoga, California.
So we have a rig that goes to those kind of calls, and earlier, I had talked to my mom about watching my daughter, Clara, on Tuesday. And we had to cut the call short because we got a call. I tried to call later. She didn't pick up her phone. This fire happens. The next morning, I wake up, and the guys at work are talking about, yeah, did you hear about that fire? They found a body. This is Tuesday now. I'm like, ugh, crazy. Then later that night, I get off duty. I'm going to hang out with my friends. And I left home, and my wife, Kate, calls me, and she's like, crying, "You need to come home. The coroners are here." And I immediately knew. I was like, "Is she dead? Is she dead?" And, like, I just knew. And then I went home, and turns out she died in that car fire that I almost went to for work.
And then my brother called me, and I think I ignored your first call because I was like, I'm tired. I just want to, like, rest for a second. And then he called again, so I finally picked up, and all he said is, "Mom's dead." And I was like, okay. Thought he was joking. I was like, that's a sick joke. Please don't joke about that. He was like, "Alex, I'm serious. Like, mom is dead." And I lost it. I was alone at my house. So I hung up the phone. I remember going to the bathroom. Like, nothing was even coming up, but I just felt so sick, which is the same reaction that I had when I got the phone call about my dad. I kept running back and forth to the toilet, not even throwing up, just dry heaving.
Dave called me. It was about 9 o'clock at night. And I was like just at the corner from my house. I could see my house. And, Dave, he's like, "Hey, Liza." And I'm like, "Hi, what's up?" And he's like, "Nothing." And I could tell in his voice, I knew something was wrong. So I go, "What's going on?" And he goes, "What are you doing right now?" And I said, "Driving home." He goes, "Okay, well, call me when you get back home." And I go, "Nope, tell me now." And it was like, it's, what is it that you know? Like, you just know something is...
Probably I was like, "Hey, what are you doing?"
No, you weren't. <I'm just kidding. laughs> So I pulled over, and I could see my house from where I pulled over. So I was almost home. And he's like, "You're stopped the car. You're not driving?" I said, "No, I'm not driving." He goes, "Okay, well, mom is dead." And I, like, time stopped. And I just remember saying, "Okay, okay, okay, okay." And I kept saying it over and over again. And Dave goes, "Are you okay?" And I go, "Well, I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm okay. I'm going to call you back." And I drove through my alley, got my car parked into the garage, grabbed all my groceries, and shut the garage door. And then I ran, like, as fast as I could, holding a bunch of groceries. And as soon as I got into the house, it was like the moment that time had stopped, it had all sped back up and crashed into me. And I collapsed when I got inside. And my husband was sitting on the couch. And he looked at me and he was like, "What is wrong?" And I said, I just said, like, "My mom is dead." And I was just, I, like, couldn't speak. And I just, like, wailed. And I remember, like a gut level soul wail, because I felt like hope, not just my mom had died, but like, my hope had died. And I knew, like, the last couple times I had seen my mom, I was so conscious about how I hugged her and how I said goodbye to her, because I knew at some, like, deep part of myself that was probably the last time I was gonna see her. So I just got into action mode and was like, I made some phone calls, and I was on a plane at like 10 o'clock the next morning to California. I even did laundry that night. Like, it's so weird how you have these moments of lucidity in, like, your grief.
Michelle's death, like her husband's, was headline news in Los Gatos. The articles said the same thing. She was a great person, a great wife, a great mom. Here is what those articles didn't say.
She was driving in the mountains at night, which is so not normal for my mom.
She hated driving, especially at night.
And there was nothing for her to be in that area while she was there. So we don't know the exact circumstances, and no one ever will, but she was in a really weird place at a really weird time and drove off a cliff.
Which brings us back to that crowded radio studio where the Achille kids are packed in to talk about all this tragedy with a total stranger. That'd be me. It's crowded in that studio, but that studio holds the entire Achille family. The three of them, David, Liza, and Alex, are all that's left. And while it's the nature of families to expand and contract, and while Liza and David each have kids of their own, this little group in a studio is what remains of the nucleus. All of the shared memories and experiences of Mark and Michelle Achille as parents are in this room together.
I mean, we've always been really close growing up, but I feel like they've filled the roles as my parents for the most part. When something exciting happens, they're the first people I call, and something bad happens, they're the first people I want to call. Like, I want my brother to walk me down the aisle when I get married, and I don't think I'd be here without them. I know I wouldn't be here without them. We do a really good job at keeping us all afloat, and that if Liza crumbles, my brother and I are here. If I crumble, my brother and sister are here. If Dave crumbles, we're here. We just do a really good job at keeping us together, and we're the three musketeers.
It's like war. If you go to war, like, you go through stuff together that, like, breaks you down to your core. Like, one of two things happens. You either go your separate ways and never want to see those people again, or you're bonded for life. And we already had the bonding, and it just, like, made it, like, we need each other now more than ever, because it's, like, it's all we got left. It's all we got left. And, like, yeah.
You never know when you're a parent if you're doing a good job. All families are complicated, but all you want to know is that your kids will all love each other and be there for each other. That you did a good enough job with them that they can do that. That they'll be okay. Even if you're murdered in your driveway, or if you die in a fiery car wreck, that when the world breaks them, and it will, that they'll be stronger in the broken places. And if they aren't, or they can't be, that they'll at least have each other to carry them along.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
I need a beer.
Good job, guys.
How are you guys?
I think we did it justice.
I think it was really good. You and what you said about mom was really good.
So good.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I'm glad you...
I want to hear it so bad.
I was, like, freezing cold and sweating.
Same.
I
took my jacket off.
This has been terrible. Thanks for asking. I'm Nora McInerney. Our senior producer is Hans Buto. Hannah Meacock-Ross is our project manager. Muna Sheikhomar is our intern. Raymond Tungakar and Jeff Kamen and Muna gave us great notes on this episode. Thank you. And Megan McInerney gave me a quiet place to write it. Niven and Stacy are our emotional support animals. And also, we're theirs. Adopt a Shih Tzu, but not the cutest ones, because I want one more. So if you see an excellent one, let me adopt it, and then you take the second best one. Thank you. Now that we're back with a brand new set of episodes, it is the perfect time to tell your friends and family about the show. They can binge it and then also be treated to new epis. So you'll seem like a hero. Our theme music is by Joffrey Wilson. Definitely Google him. Amazing musician. And we are a part of American Public Media, APM.